flows of angel hair and ice cream castles in the air and feathered canyons everywhere. I've looked at clouds that way, but now they only block the sun. They rain and snow on everyone. So many things I would have done, but clouds got in my
We're delighted to have Judy Collins with us now. And Judy, we're looking forward to your two-night appearance here at the Egyptian Theater in Park City.
That's,
yes. And that's February 6th and 7th. And
yes.
And boy, I'm going to be front row. And
good.
That's presented by our station, KPCW. And we're delighted to have you on KPCW now. You've been here a number of times over the years, playing at Deer Valley and Salt Lake. And you have a real affinity for the West, of course, Colorado, where you grew up, and the mountains and all of that, right?
Big skies, big mountains, big dreams. I love it out there.
Excellent. Well, given the time we have, let's skip over the first part of your book, which is about childhood years. You learned to play classical music and grew up the daughter of a famed radio host in Denver. The book is called Sweet Judy Blue Eyes, My Life in Music. So let's go to the music. And what turned you from classical piano to picking up a guitar and singing folk music?
Well, it was hearing a song called The Gypsy Rover, which really changed my life. It was a song in a movie score of the Bold Black Knight, an Alan Ladd movie about King Arthur and his merry men. And I listened, and I had never heard anything like it. It just blew me away. Guitars and the singing of Elton Hayes and this old song, which was, of course, part of the movie score. And I took it to my friends who were dancers, and we had this group called the Little Reds, and we told the story of Little Red Riding Hood. I sang the story and made up the chords, the theme songs, and my friends danced the story. We needed some new material, so this was perfect. But it got me thinking and desperately yearning to sing folk songs. So that's what I did. And, of course, the great folk scare was just starting, and I was really in at the top of the game.
I am a maid of constant sorrow. I've seen trials all of my days. I'm going back to California, place where I was partly raised.
I had an incredible time singing, traveling everywhere.
Well, talk about perfect timing. You know, you started out, I read about the local clubs you played, like Tulagi's and The Sink in Boulder, and I had to laugh because that was a college watering hole for me, both of those dives. And you started out singing places like that. But very soon, you're at Greenwich Village and a place called Gertie's Folk City. And that's really the epicenter of all that came to be in folk music and folk rock. And who all did you run into there?
Oh, well, it was incredible. When I got there, everybody was there in 61. Dylan was still Bob Zimmerman and singing those I thought, badly played old Woody Guthrie blues. And of course, Gene Ritchie was there recording for Elektra. Cynthia Gooding, Ed McCurdy, Peter Paul and Mary, the wonderful Mary Travers, Ramblin' Jack Elliott was around, Arlo Guthrie, you name it, Eric Anderson, Tom Paxton, and he'd walk down the street with me, Tom Wooden, he'd say, what about singing Bottle of Wine, Fruit on the Vine?
When you gonna let me get sober,
Let me alone, let me go home, let me go back and start over. Well, I'm rambling around this dirty old town, singing for nickels and dimes. Time's getting rough, I ain't got enough to buy a little bottle of wine. Bottle of wine, fruit in the vine, when you gonna let me get sober? Let me alone, let me go home, let me go back and start over.
He told me recently, he said, you know, you were the first person to sing that. He said, I hadn't even recorded it, which happened over and over again. Joni Mitchell had not recorded Both Sides Now. Leonard Cohen had not recorded any of his songs because he didn't have a record label. Randy Newman didn't have a record label and hadn't started recording when I found his song. So I was lucky because I was in the middle of Hot and Cold running folk singers, and I didn't write any songs. So I was really lucky.
And you were right place, right time, and you recorded a lot of those songs, Bird on a Wire, Leonard Cohen, in all his greatness.
And I sure did.
And your first album was Made of Constant Sorrow, and then that's followed up by Wildflowers in 1967, which has a breakaway hit, Both Sides Now, Joni Mitchell's song. What did that song and that album do to your career? And what's it like to have lightning strike like that?
Just shot you through the... like riding a cannon, you know, through the hemisphere. The most important thing about it, people started answering my phone calls. And I was always very involved with every aspect of my career. I had a manager, and I was in a bit of a fog about how much money I made or what I spent. But otherwise, I was on top of it creatively. I knew the singers, I knew the songwriters, I had great producers. I had a wonderful relationship with my record label, so I was very involved in everything that was going on. So when that happened and people started answering my phone calls, that was a big plus.
And then, of course, you follow that up a year later with the album Who Knows Where the Time Goes, and after years in Denver and clubs like Talagi's, you're absolutely an overnight sensation suddenly.
Across the morning sky, all the birds are leaving. Ah, how can they know it's time for them to go? Before the winter fire, we'll still be dreaming. I do not count the time. Who knows where the time goes? Who knows where?
And, of course, then the early 60s yield to the later 60s and a period of great political and social turmoil in America. And you're in the thick of it, and you write frankly about partaking in sex, drugs, and rock and roll like so many of the era. Why did you want to be so open about every aspect of your life?
Shouldn't you be? I mean, what is this all for unless you tell the truth? And if you hide behind some fog of romance, you're not doing anybody a service. But I was perfectly suited for the 60s. I was a rebel. I wanted to always tell everybody secrets. I didn't believe that the government knew what it was doing. I didn't like being lied to by people like Johnson. I was definitely against the war and read people like David Halberstam when he started writing about what was really going on in Vietnam.
Now you masters of war, you that build all the guns, you that build the death planes, you that build the big bombs, you that hide behind walls, you that hide behind desks, I just want you to know I can see through your mask. You that never done nothing but build to destroy. You play with my world like it's your little toy. You put a gun in my hand, you hide from my eyes. Then you turn and run farther when the fast bullets fly. Like Judas of old, you lie and deceive. A world war can be won, you want me to believe. But I see through your eyes, and I see through your brain. I can see through the water that runs down my drain.
I went to the Soviet Union in 1965, and that was a revolution. My sister, who was then 11, took that trip with me, mostly to console me for the fact that I had lost the custody of my son at that point, and did for a couple of years. But I wanted, of course, to show what it was like. What was it like to be an active alcoholic with this tremendous career going on, and how did I do it? I still don't know how I did it.
You know, you have. Let me interrupt because you had a prophetic story about a conversation with Janis Joplin, and you at the time thought you were hiding alcoholism well.
Oh yes, I certainly did. I was at the Troubadour, great club. I write a lot about the artists I work with and the clubs I worked with and, of course, the songs and how we chose them and how I was able to get them recorded. And I was there at the Troubadour singing. Of course, that was my life, singing in clubs around the country. And I went to see Paul Williams. I was opening the next night, and I went to see a show one night. And my friend John Cook, who was Janis's and the Big Brother and the Holding Company's road manager at that point, he introduced me again to Janis, whom I'd met before, and we were sitting there, and Paul Williams went off the stage, and she turned to me in this smoke-filled room, noisily, everybody was clapping for Paul, and she said, "You know, one of us is going to make it, and it's not going to be me." Now, I say in the book, you know, this always haunted me, because I couldn't figure out how she knew what I was drinking, how I was drinking. I mean, she was there, out there in the, you know, out, really out there. And everybody knew she had this Southern Comfort thing, and she was about to dive into her heroin addiction. And I, you know, I was just kind of, I looked like this goody-goody in a way, you know, yeah, kind of flowing hair and this kind of angelic look and the voice of, they said angelic voice and so on. So my cover story was I was just as active as she was. I was drinking probably as much as she was, but I had not ventured into that wild outward display. But I thought, you know, what I thought was, you know, a drunk can always nail a drunk. And that was really what happened that night. It was very moving to me. And in days to come, a couple of years later, she was dead. And my friend John Cook found her at the Landmark Hotel.
Well, we're glad.
What a tragic ending.
Yeah, we're glad you are a survivor. And I've got to ask a couple more musical questions. And one, the name of your book, Sweet Judy, Blue Eyes, the Crosby, Stills, Nash song of the same name, is one of Rolling Stone's top picks as best rock songs of all times. But it's
of
really,
if
it were country music, it would be called a breakup song. Because it was Stephen Stills' song about his sadness over breaking up with you.
I am yours, you are mine, you are what you are. You make it hard to remember what we
said and done and felt about each other.
But babe, have mercy.
Don't let the past remind us of what we are not now.
I am not dreaming.
I am yours, you are mine. You are what you are. You make it hard.
Yes, he said recently, I heard that he said in a concert, you know, Judy's book has me in it, and she treats me better than I treated her at the end. But the nice thing is that he and I are still friends, and last year we got together and did a duet on my last album, which is called Paradise.
As I lie in my bed in the morning, without you, without you, every song in my breast dies a morning, without you, without you. Are you going away with no word of farewell? Will there be not a trace left behind? I could have loved you better, didn't mean to be unkind. Don't you know that was the last thing on my mind? Don't you know that was the last thing on my mind?
I saw him recently, and he dedicated Helplessly Hoping to me, which I thought was very sweet.
Very nice.
He doesn't sing Sweet Judy Blue Eyes anymore. I don't know whether he can't get his voice around it or what, but he doesn't sing it. But he did that, and that was very nice.
Do you have, from your long catalog, a favorite you like to sing at every concert?
Well, you know, I've got 50 years worth of material, so I will probably always sing two of the hits. You know, I might sing Amazing Grace, Both Sides Now, Someday Soon, Send in the Clowns, maybe Bird on the Wire, maybe Suzanne. And then, of course, Tambourine Man I've brought back because I love it so much and the audiences love it so much. But I always have then 50 years of material to add to that, so I'm always turning things around and singing different shows. We did a stretch a couple weeks ago in San Francisco, and we were at the Raz Club for 2 weeks, and we sang practically a different show every night because there is so much material.
Indeed. And what can our Park City audience expect in a nice, intimate venue on the Egyptian stage with you and an accompanist?
Well, I'll sing everything that I know. I'll sing songs.
Well, we'll be
the
there all
collection.
Night.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I'll certainly sing some of the big hits, you know, probably one of those that I mentioned, and some songs from my new album, Bohemian, which I'm very excited about. It has three or four of the old songs from the day, and then I have a bunch of new songs, including a song about my mother that I just wrote. She died in December, and it's called In the Twilight. I have an audio of Sweet Judy Blue Eyes, which was very interesting to do because I sang, I included here and there a couple of lyrics of songs, two lines or so of a lot of songs. And I break into song a number of times in that. Plus, I have this new children's book, so I'll sing the song from that book, When You Wish Upon a Star. It's on the Peter Yarrow imprint of Imagine, book publishing company.
Well, thank you, Judy Collins, calling in from New York. And KPCW is proud to be sponsoring your two performances next February on the 6th and 7th at the Egyptian Theater here in Park City. We'll see you then.
My pleasure. Okay, see you then.